A new study reports credit card rewards provide a lifeline for working-class Americans. Rewards like cashback empower low-income families to pay for everyday essentials. So why are DC politicians partnering with corporate megastores to end your hard-earned rewards? The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill takes billions from American families, lining corporate pockets instead. Tell DC politicians to oppose Durbin-Marshall. Learn more at electronicpaymentscoalition.com.
The biggest movie in the country right now is about a civil war in America.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The future president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
I saw Civil War twice this week to prepare for today's interview, and it left me a little shaken. Another colleague told me they were crying for half an hour after the movie was over. If you see the movie at a theater in downtown Washington, the scenes of the Lincoln Memorial exploding and the White House being attacked are jarring when you exit into the DC air. The movie is writer and director Alex Garland's very in-your-face attempt to imagine the unimaginable in America. An authoritarian leader in the White House, intractable political differences being resolved through violence, and the very specific horrors of modern warfare, urban fighting, refugee camps, mass atrocities, the collapse of the currency, all those things that we associate with stuff that can happen over there, happening right here in the United States. Civil War is also a movie about journalism. It follows four reporters traveling from New York to Washington, D.C., via a circuitous route through Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Virginia. The movie takes on a lot of the weighty issues we talk about on shows like this one: media ethics, political polarization, disinformation polluting our media ecosystem, the potential threat from an autocratic leader. So we asked one of the stars of the movie to discuss it. I'm Ryan Lizza. This is Playbook Deep Dive. Wagner Moura plays a hardened war correspondent addicted to the battlefield. He also provides some much-needed levity in the movie.
Out of interest, are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
Moura is best known for his role as Pablo Escobar in Narcos, but he's also a former journalist, a political activist, and a writer and director himself. His 2019 movie, Marighella, about the coup and counter-revolution in Brazil in the 1960s, incurred the wrath of then-president Jair Bolsonaro in Moura's home country of Brazil. I sat down with Moura on Thursday, just as Washington's annual White House Correspondents Association dinner festivities were getting underway. That's the time of year when the relationship between journalists, politicians, and Hollywood is at its peak in this town. In fact, Kim Kardashian was visiting the White House as we spoke. So given the film's agenda-setting plot, its blockbuster status right now, and the unique season in both Washington and Hollywood, Moura was an ideal guest to discuss the weighty issues raised by Civil War.
I'm convinced that polarization is the biggest threat to democracies in the world nowadays.
We had a fascinating conversation about how making a movie about a new civil war changed his own personal thinking about politics, how his experience with Bolsonaro in Brazil is a warning for Americans, and the role of art in politics.
Wagner, so if I seem a little like shaken, I've watched this movie twice now in the last 14 hours. I don't recommend that because it has a certain effect on you, and especially if you live in Washington and watch it down the street from the White House and the Lincoln Memorial. It's a jarring movie, and I know you've been talking about it a lot and you've processed it and lived with it for so long, but do you remember the first time you watched it all the way through and what your reaction was?
Yeah, it was a very strong experience. Yeah. I like to say that this film causes cognitive dissonance, especially.
How so?
I think especially for the American audiences, but I think that for everybody, because the images that we are used to seeing with Hollywood and with their dream industry, the fantasy industry, those images usually they take place in the Middle East, in Africa, in South America, in Asia. So
yeah, the obviously there have been movies made where, you know, cities that we're all familiar with get, you know, get blown up, but there's something about the way that this movie's done that's brings home that reality. And a big part of the movie is the, if you don't think it can happen here, here's how it could happen here theme. You know, whether it's you guys driving along a bombed out highway, or, you know, driving up to an international relief fund site where refugees in the United States are housed in this stadium, mm-hmm. you know, down to the final climactic battle in the streets of Washington. I'm just curious sort of how you think talk about that a little bit. Tell me about the what you all were trying to do with the hammering into especially an American audience, that we're not so insulated from the kind of trauma and conflict that we only see on CNN, and it just always seems like it's happening over there, but that can be brought here, seems to be the biggest message of the movie.
Yeah, I think so. No nation is immune to if you throughout history, if you you know all every nation can be in there. All democracies can and right now, especially now, I think I like political films, right? And I wouldn't say that they would make a change or anything, but I think they're important.
Do you have a favorite? Good. Sorry.
Yeah, I directed only one movie in my life. This film is called Marighella, which is a film about the ones who resisted the Brazilian dictatorship that we had there back in the 60s and the 70s. So it is a very political film. And
I want to talk about Marighella.
Yeah. So, but Marighella is a film about a very specific time in history, right? Like it's a film that it's hard not to choose a side, right? Like
you have a clear point of view as a director.
I have a very clear point of view. I never denied it. And the film, which is a film about the 60s and the 70s. A film that became because the film was censored under Bolsonaro, right, in Brazil.
And yeah, so let's talk. I was going to ask you about that later, but since we're on it, let's talk. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems so relevant to some of the themes of civil war.
Yeah,
and what's going on in the United States right now?
We could speak about that like deeply, but I just want to say that in comparison to civil war, Alex Garland managed to do something really really like. It's really a film that doesn't have an ideological agenda. You know, he puts aside he has his own political views, but he puts all that aside and he makes a film about the aftermath of a polarized situation and how dangerous that can be. I'm convinced that polarization is the biggest threat to democracies in the world nowadays. And I myself changed because I used to be very combative. I'm a progressive left-wing man, and I really, really think that this is now time to start to build bridges and to listen to each other, because I've been studying this, like scholars that study like the what are the things that would make possible for a country to get in a social convulsion.
Yeah. Was it something you studied to sort of prepare for this movie, or just generally because you're a politically active, engaged person, or both?
Both, but of course, when I knew that I was going to make a film about this, I jumped deeper in that And that scared me. Just what I was reading from scholars, that scared me immediately.
It sounds like it's made you maybe a little less ideological.
I still have very strong convictions. I do. It's not that I don't. I'm still a man who believes in social justice and in all the things that gravitate around that idea. But the extreme right, like in Brazil, came up in a very strong way, and it was really fast. Because after the dictatorship, like in 85, during the when the country was finally elected a president, it was as we had like a right wing dictatorship, and our constitution is very progressive. It made us think in Brazil that we were living in a dream world of progressiveness, but Brazil is a country that's built upon lots of violence and racism and elitism and so when Bolsonaro got elected, he's not an alien that came from out of space. He's deeply grounded in the history of the country, and we all had to face that battle in a very strong way, because it was very it took us sort of out of guard.
That's that's really interesting, because it is similar to the United States in the sense that by the end of the Obama era, there was this sense, you could find a lot of pundits talking about how a Republican couldn't win the White House again, because there was a natural Democratic majority and that, you know, progressivism reigned. But there's always a backlash.
Yeah, exactly. But so that in that moment, we all had to be very combative. But now I still believe in everything and that made me the political person that I am. But I really think that it's time to build bigger bridges. And when I speak with my friends, they go like, "How is that even possible?" Because the polarization got to a point where we think we hate them, they hate us, you know, and we have to talk about journalism here, right, today, because the importance of journalism and the spread of the fake news and the crazy narratives, it's just isolating these two groups as never before in history. But so it's getting harder.
For people who haven't seen the movie, it really is a movie about journalism, photojournalism. You're the one print reporter one of the two print reporters of the core four that we follow through the journey from New York City and the circuitous route to Washington, D.C. For listeners that don't know, your character, Joel, is a war reporter, adrenaline junkie who is addicted to this kind of combat coverage. I'll quote this so people get some context. You know, after leaving one of the many, you know, sort of horrific firefights in the movie, you just have this ecstatic reaction where you're like, holy fucking shit, what a fucking rush. But that's the sort of essence of your character. And he's the character that adds a lot of levity to a lot of seriousness. How did you learn the business enough and learn the psyche of that kind of journalist to play it?
Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly right. I graduated as a journalist, right? I worked as a journalist for a while. Most of my friends are journalists in my hometown, Salvador, and other parts of Brazil. I had played the journalist before in this series called Shining Girls. I played an investigative journalist, which made me so happy, and because I have such an admiration for journalists. And then I met this guy from the Chicago Sun-Times, an amazing journalist. So I was talking to him and going, but war journalism is another thing. So I read a lot about it because many of these journalists, they wrote books about their experiences in the field. And I read many of those biographies. But I spoke with some of them. What I wanted to know from them was, it was less how they did their job in the field. It was more like, what was the feeling of being a civilian in the war? They were able to articulate very precisely the feeling of being in a war zone. It's very similar to being a soldier, and the traumas and the thing. It's kind of sad because at the same time they're doing an amazing, such an important job, bringing information and stories and images that are going to desensitize our souls to the especially nowadays with so many images, but they're going to desensitize us to the horror of war. But at the same time, these people, there is a very sad element in that, because they experience something so extraordinary in the war zone. The horror and the beauty of the camera, the friendships, and it's so strong that when they come back home, their lives just stop making sense.
Yeah.
And that's a very sad part of it all. Families, even children and friends and partners and everything else. So they need to go back to that place in order so their lives can still make sense.
And I'm just curious what you've picked up in terms of the reactions from that world and how you think about those questions.
I've met some journalists that came to me and said, like, this is the best compliment for an actor. Like, they go, like, this is exactly what it is. This is, you captured what we felt. It's this is it. This is journalism and the importance of journalism for democracy and the crisis that journalism is going through right now that we should definitely talk about. I think that Alex was he knew what he was talking about when he wrote these characters, because they are very common. Like Lee, for example, Lee is going through all that. And Joel has the dynamic between the four characters is very interesting because they're very different. And and Joel is like, he knows that he can, what's happening to Lee can happen to him too. So his job,
he's not there yet though.
He's not there, and he's like, and he knows that that's dangerous. So his lights up. It makes everything happy and easy and lighter. And he's fighting that feeling that he knows that can destroy him as well, the way it did to Lee.
A new study reports credit card rewards provide a lifeline for working-class Americans. Rewards like cashback empower low-income families to pay for everyday essentials. So why are DC politicians partnering with corporate megastores to end your hard-earned rewards? The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill takes billions from American families, lining corporate pockets instead. Tell DC politicians to oppose Durbin-Marshall. Learn more at electronicpaymentscoalition.com.
You experienced something in Brazil that is, beyond what I can think of any journalist in the United States experiencing. Tell us what happened under Bolsonaro with your movie Marighella.
Marighella is a film about this legendary leader of the resistance, the armed resistance against the dictatorship, right? So, and Bolsonaro always praised the dictatorship, this guy who tortured many people in that time, called Carlos Brilhante Ustra, and Bolsonaro is openly a fan of that guy.
This is after a time in Brazilian history where this was sort of viewed as a terrible time and a leader to be rejected and condemned. He tried to rehabilitate him.
Absolutely. He celebrates the day of the coup d'etat, which is crazy. We cannot laugh about anything anymore. Bolsonaro used to be a joke back in the 2000, and no one really could foresee that guy could become the president of the
country. Sounds familiar.
I know. So when I released my film, the film was released in Berlin in 2019. And right after that, we just couldn't have the film premiered. We faced all kind of like boycotts, and not only open boycotts with him, like empowering his followers to be aggressive to the actors and to myself, and to like, not only that, but Brazil is still very dependent on the state in terms of when we release a movie, there is this agency called Ancine, the state agency that, liberates funds in order for you to release your movie. And all the paths suddenly got closed to us, and no one could explain what was going on until the moment that I openly went to the newspaper and said, this is censorship. they're openly censoring my film. So in 2019, the film was released in Berlin, and I could only release the film in Brazil in 2021, which is crazy. And the whole, and we had to be...
After Bolsonaro, well, but Bolsonaro was no, Bolsonaro he, lost he, in 2022, right?
Yeah, he was still there, but it was his last year in power, and all the progressive people in Brazil always supported the film. It was a battle, like I said, and I wasn't afraid of that. And I really did it, and I'm proud of it, and I'm proud of the film. It's interesting how a film is a mix of what you want to say as an artist with the time that this particular art form is being seen, right? If I had released this film like 10 years ago, it would have had another reaction from the audiences. Like, it's the same with Civil War when people ask me, oh, it's going to be released in the election year, and go like, yeah, this is how it is. But with Marighella, it was tough, man. We got many deaths. Threats.
I was going to ask, like, personally, like, what was the level of pain, you know?
It was hardcore. It was very hard. Many places we had to have lots of security. Like I said, it's this polarized moment. When you see people that invaded the capital and people that did the same in Brazil, I kind of see them and I'm like, it's not that they were like 200, 500, 600, I don't know how many bad people, but it's people that have been told for many years through the way they get information, their social medias or to WhatsApps or to whatever. And especially when they have like their leaders, their supreme leaders, empowering them with the speech of violence based on false narratives. And that is very scary, man. The things that Bolsonaro say or the things that Trump says, if you apply any simple fact check to the things that they do, that they say, it's crazy because they lie like all the time. And this is what scares me most nowadays, is that the truth as we know it is over. Is over, especially with the advance of AI and all that. Like, that's very scary.
Let me ask you a question. There's been so much written and discussed about comparisons of Bolsonaro and Trump. As someone who's had this personal, in a sense, experience with Bolsonaro and his government trying to prevent your film from being seen, and obviously you're an American citizen, you live in the States, what are some insights that you've had when you compare the two leaders?
Yeah, very similar, right? Both are countries that are built upon immigration. And with people from different parts of the world making what their countries what they are, but also too they're countries that are also built upon very conservative and violent forces. Racism is a thing both in Brazil and in the U.S. They manifest in different ways, but they are equally strong. And I think that Bolsonaro and Trump, they have different upbringings, but they emerge as forces that represent the part of our histories that I personally think are the worst part of American and Brazilian histories. And when you mentioned the sanctions that Bolsonaro has been facing in Brazil, I think that the fact that we were under a dictatorship back in the 60s and the 70s made that Brazil act faster in terms of like...
Interesting. They knew this history.
We are a younger democracy, full of problems and all that, but we know how bad a dictatorship is. It's interesting how it was exactly the same thing. Two election deniers empowering their followers to act violently. It's the same thing. But Brazil acted really fast and sending people to jail, finding the financiers, and even Bolsonaro himself, he lost his political powers. He can't get elected. And yeah, he's facing
banned.
Lots of... Is banned
until
his,
2030, right?
Exactly. And he's facing lots of charges and everything. And I think in the U.S., things didn't move as fast as it should. Democracy is not a given. You know, it's really not. And I think that's not something that Americans are fully aware of. You know, I think that somehow Americans take democracy for granted, not because of anything, but because you don't know how horrible a authoritarian government can be.
Few important scenes and characters in the movie. I just want to get your impressions on, if we could, Wagner. The first is the president in the movie. Now, this is a character Alex Garland created, of course. What's your view of who he was drawing on? Who do you see in the president?
To connect that character to Donald Trump or to any like real character, being very honest with you, I don't think that this is fair to what the film wants to say. The film really doesn't pick a side. You know, that president could easily be a Democratic president. You know, who knows? Oh,
that's interesting. Yeah. So that's important to all of you that made this movie is to not put it in one of those boxes.
No, exactly. Again, as opposed to Marighella, right? That's like a film openly. Yeah. It gives names. And in this one, it's not about picking a side, you know, and as you can see, sometimes it's very hard for me to do that. But again, like, I think it's time to build bridges.
The most memorable scene in the movie, I think, you know, by far, although I think it competes with the destruction of DC, at least in my mind, is the scene at the mass grave where Jesse Plemons, who happens to be Kirsten Dunst's husband, has really incredible performance and asks you this defining question of the movie. You say, "We are American. You're trying to save your two colleagues." And he says, "What kind of American are you?" I'm curious about the reactions that you've seen to that scene and how you've processed it now that the movie's out in the world. And I'm wondering what you think of the debate about it. And then I'd also like you to talk about what it was like to perform that day. I understand it was pretty harrowing.
It was. It was the hardest scene for me to play. I had a very emotional reaction to that after we shot it for 2 days, entire days. It was hot. And he kept asking me what kind of American I am. And that really made me think what kind of American I am. And not only about myself, but about people like me, like people that live here and immigrants. It's the amount of racism that since summarizes all that we've been talking about here, about the film, the craziness and the absurdity of it all. What do you mean, what kind of American are you? This is Americans. It's Brazilians, Americans, and that's it. You know, and that's the whole point of the movie. There's no kinds of Americans. There's American people. And that's what we have to start thinking about it. That's what I started thinking about it more and more and more. Even when I deal with people that are in a completely opposite political spectrum, those are other Americans. Those are Brazilians. Those are, you know, those are human beings. I don't want to be naive or anything, but when you talk about war, the first thing that happens in a war zone is you have to dehumanize the other so you can make all kinds of atrocities. But if it's not human, then you can do whatever you want. You know, so the idea of that the others are not humans, are not people like you. That's what I say. The people that invaded the Capitol and the people that invaded, of course, there are criminals there too, but some of those people are good people, are people that really went there thinking that they were doing something patriotic, that they were doing something important. I remember, man, I don't know how it was here in the U.S., but I remember a moment in the Brazilian history, of course, after the democratization, that you would talk to people that, you know, from the other parties, and you would have discussions in the bar, and no one wanted to kill anyone, you know, and you disagreed, and you could even get heat, but it was like soccer, you know, like it got heat, but you don't hate the other person. You don't think the other person is a criminal, is a bandit or anything like that. So yeah, I think that scene summarizes a lot what the film is about. And after the second day of shooting, I cried. I lay down in the grass and cried a lot. It hit me hard in a level that I couldn't even say exactly what it is.
People will be mad at me if I don't ask you anything about playing Pablo Escobar in Narcos, which is where a lot of American audiences are probably, you know you best from. Just a silly question, which is what's your favorite sad Pablo meme that ever was produced on the internet?
I love all of them. I think I think it's so funny. You know, I think everyone that I read, I think it's funny. I in Brazil, there's one that's like when people realize Carnival's about to end, and he's sad like that. I love those memes. I think it's really funny.
Between Narcos and Marighella, and now this movie, Maybe Narcos a little bit less, but from what you just said, I think it tracks. You know, these are three big statements, political, or at least two of them are very big political statement films. Marighella for sure, Civil War for sure. Do you see film and art in general as having the ability to spark conversations that can make change in a way that maybe journalism can't, or has that not been your experience with these three projects we talked about?
I think so. Listen, talking about dictatorships again, every authoritarian government, the first three things that they want to shut down is journalism, universities, and art, and artists. Because these three pillars, they ground you with reality and science. You can put science in a university. It grounds you with reality and it makes you think. It really makes you think out of the box. I think Shakespeare is political. I've learned so much about politics with Shakespeare, but then maybe more than anything else. I don't know exactly the practical result because art is not about practicities at all. It's what is this for? I don't know. But I think that what the world would be if we didn't have inside of it, when we don't talk about dehumanization, if you have inside of your soul this spark of poetry, I think that this is something that makes us more connected to the others and to more humans, or at least more connected to ourselves. And these questions that don't have answers. Why are we here? What are we doing here? What life is about? Art doesn't have an explanation for that, but it makes it easier. I really think everything is political. Every art is sort of political, like because if it changes you, if it changes in your inner self, or if it sparks conversations, like you said, it is political. But political films that are made to talk politics, I think they are very important. I love them aesthetically. I love them. And I connect with them very strongly.
Wagner, what's next? What do you have on your plate after this?
So I'm going to Brazil, man. I'm happy because it's more than 10 years that I don't work in my language, that I don't speak Portuguese in a film. So I'm going to work with this amazing director called Kleber Mendonça Filho, Brazilian director. I'm going to shoot a movie with him. And then at the end of the year, I'm going to direct my film here in the U.S., which is, of course, a political film. It's an anti-capitalism Christmas movie. to be shot here in the U.S. In the end of the year.
It's an anti-capitalist. You've got the slogan down for that. An anti-capitalist Christmas movie. All right.
I don't know what's it called. It's called The Last Night at the Lobster. It's based on
Onan's book. Yeah.
Stuart Onan's book about working class people that get fired from a chain restaurant a week before Christmas.
All right, looking forward to it. Wagner, we have a weird thing where our last question is always proposed by our last guest, which makes things very weird because you don't, you know, you might not know who the last guest is and you certainly don't know who the next guest is. So this question comes from Congressman Tom Cole, who's the new chairman of the House Appropriations Committee.
Wow.
It's a pretty broad one. It'll be easy. Why did you get into this business that you're in? He meant politics, but you know you can answer it more broadly. And what keeps you in it while so many more reasonable people are fleeing it? But I think he was expecting you to be a politician. With that. But anyway, you can answer it in your own way.
I'm glad.
I want you to give a question for our next guest.
Okay, so I got in for social reasons. I didn't feel that I was particularly talented, or I was only 15, but I remember the day that when I walked into a room full of actors and artists that I was like, I felt that I wanted to hang out with that. That was my kind of people. That was my people. That was my tribe. So that's how it began. And I think that I still do it because I don't think I can do anything else. And a better explanation, a more beautiful explanation would be these films that I've been doing, these theater plays and everything, these things really made me learn a lot about myself, made me a better person. I don't think it's selfish to say that I do it first for myself. If it makes sense for myself, if it sparks a change in myself, I think it would do something with other people.
Excellent.
So the question to the next guest. Wow, man, I wasn't expecting that. Let me think. Talk about the truth. What is truth for you? What is the truth? And what's the importance of the truth nowadays? And in this polarized world with different narratives, and what's the importance of the truth? Because this is something that I've been really thinking about. And I think that we are losing track, losing contact with the facts. And that's what journalism is about. And I hope that journalism can survive this crisis that's going on.
It's a big question and really important one. So thanks for that. And thanks for doing this. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Likewise, man. It was great talking to you. Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Please tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.